Good evening. So nice to see everyone. Some new faces tonight, and some old familiar faces from Jikoji. What an honor that you've come to be with us. How did you know about us?
Oh, well, my dad and I, we were on the internet, are looking for a Zen location, a Zen meditation location. This is our first time here today, and my personal first time practicing or trying to attempt meditation and counting the breaths and asking it. It's actually a lot harder than I thought. Yeah, it was a lot. I caught my mind moving at different thoughts at the same time, like a TV station. So I realized... Yeah, it's a lot harder than I thought.
Well, you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. You'll never stop it. Mm-hmm. It just keeps squirting out thinking all the time. But you can sit underneath that and be peaceful at the same time. But it takes practice.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So your name?
My name is Eni.
Eni?
Yes, Eni.
And...
My
your dad?
My dad's
name is Fi.
Fi.
Like
yes.
A number Fi. Yeah, Fi, like a number.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie.
Jeffrey.
Fi.
Karen. Samia.
Paul. Joe.
Fi.
Eni.
Stanya.
I'm Angie. So this is what we're studying. It's called Training the Mind. It's not a Zen book. This is very strange. It's Buddhist, but Chogyam Trungpa wrote this commentary on the Lojong guiding principles, you could say, of how to be in the world. And it's a list, really, of practices that one by one, all through the months, we've taken them week by week. So number one, we take home and, or this time, I'll tell you what we had this time. I hope people remembered. Always abide by the basic principles of bodhisattva vows and the precepts. So that's very fundamental. That's what we originally promise ourselves, is to remember the four vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them or to be with them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So those are the bodhisattva vows that... very early on we learn and carry with us for the rest of our life. And then the precepts are the ten I never know how to talk about them because they sound like it's some kind of imprecation saying you should not be bad, you should be good. And it's not like that. It means basically pay attention to your life with everything that you do and acknowledge your mistakes when you make them and understand them. Understand yourself. So when you vow not to kill, which is number one, it doesn't mean that I'm never going to kill anymore, because that's not possible. We kill every time we wipe our eyebrows, because there are billions of people living in our eyebrows and our eyelashes, much less under our feet as we walk. Even Jains who walk with a little brush in front of them to not step on anything, they can't get rid of all of those. They're killing them as they go. Much less the carrots that we eat. We pulled them out of the ground in a rude way and eaten them up in order to sustain our life. So instead of saying, I will never kill, we do say, I do kill, and I am very, very grateful for all the life that is sustaining my life. And I vow to continue that life through my life. And it's the same all the way through for the ten. So that's what this basically is. This point, or this slogan, is to keep these two principles. And then refrain from outrageous action, which sounds outrageous already. But what it's pointing to is sometimes people get carried away with being spiritual and think it's and show off about it. So it's saying, don't show off. Don't make a big deal. Don't show your spirituality in some sort of la-di-da way. Just be ordinary. And work on yourself, work on the inside. But don't make an exhibition of the outside. And then develop patience. Practice wherever we are of practice, not just when it's good times, when we can feel all holy and spiritual and everything is nice, but especially when things are really rough. When we're very tempted to be jealous or angry or upset, and be able to step back. Just step back from it. You can't make it go away, but you don't have to participate. Don't have to do the dance of it. But let it be. So those are the principles that we've been practicing this week. So it's now, I'm curious to hear what you have to say about your experience, those of you who carried this home last week. And maybe this has something to do with those of you who weren't here last week, who can call up some reason to respond to these interesting proposals for us. This is how to live wisely, how to live with compassion and kindness. That's the whole issue in this book, is how to be compassionate and kind. It's very simple, but it's not easy.
Is this all in this section called Prajna Parin?
Yes.
Prajna, which is the knife, right?
Yes, the knife. Yeah.
That was a nice image. It turns out my new yoga teacher was also given that name Prajna by her teacher.
Uh-huh.
And so it seems like I'm supposed to learn about it.
It's wisdom.
Right.
It's wisdom.
Wisdom.
And Manjushri, the bodhisattva of wisdom of practice, shows him sometimes carrying a sword to cut through the baloney that goes on in our mind all the time. Just cut through. Because we believe it. We believe all of that stuff is true, and we get carried away with the stories of it, and we get all moved, and if you realize it's just a story, or as Coben said, you know, when you sit, everything you think is just a lie. It's all you're doing is sitting quietly in the Quaker's meeting house. You know, it's nowhere else. But our mind takes us miles and miles away. So then we come back. Yeah, that is a good image. Prajna just means wisdom, but a very particular kind of wisdom. Yeah. Thank you.
May I say something, please?
Of course.
One of the reasons why I wanted to explore Zazen is to be able to not be controlled by emotion or passions. I think when it comes to sitting and meditating, then our mind has to be extremely calm. But what I noticed for myself is that when I sit down and I study, for example, or I have performance anxiety of taking exams, I feel the physiological aspects of my body under stress, and it feels absolutely uncomfortable.
Yes.
You know, your fight or flight instinct kicks in.
Yes.
And I think one of the aspects of breathing meditation that I really appreciate is that it allows my mind to stay calm, and I focus on the present moment. But one challenge I have is putting that mindfulness into action, and that comes back down to intention. If I can confess, having that intention that's not ego diluted, but more bodhisattva natured, is something that I want to explore, and I feel that it's something that I'm seeking and searching for outside of me. But in all the books I've read, it always says look within. But I need guidance in terms of what am I looking for?
Yes.
What is that wisdom that's already inherently within me? That's what I'm struggling with right now.
The only way to know is to practice. You have to go inside to know the inside.
Just meditate.
It helps to have a teacher, of course, because many things will happen and you need a kind of check with somebody. But basically, the wisdom is your own. So what you're seeking, you already have. You already are. And you are also a human being with lots of emotion, passions, as well as compassion. And also you have the ability to achieve getting through the exams, for instance, with the kind of physical reaction that gets you through. If you're anxious, that anxiety actually helps you, if it's not overwhelming. The adrenaline wakes your brain up very sharply. If it doesn't paralyze you, then it gets you through it. But it's about knowing yourself. Deeply, deeply knowing yourself. And the best way is to sit this way and then check it out.
It's pretty frightening.
It's scary.
To see, you know, through all the channels of thoughts, you see all your good and your bad stuff.
They're both there.
And then you just have to be very honest with yourself and receive yourself.
Exactly.
And not reject it.
Just say thank you very much to the bad side, which is also good. a lot of it is very helpful, even though it's awful. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think you're on the right track.
This is day one.
This is it.
This is day one. Thank you.
Yeah. Paul?
You needn't limit your meditation to being here. Mm-hmm. When you feel that anxiety, you can sit back, take a few breaths, make a few counts of breath, and then go back to your work. Mm-hmm. When you sense your discomfort, just relax, do a few bits of meditation, go back to work. Practice is all day and all night.
Yeah.
It never ends.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
That's what this is about. It's all the time, not some special occasion.
Yeah.
Sanya?
I'm not sure, you said something about performance.
Performance anxiety. Right.
Like performance as a certain something in particular.
Mm-hmm. Just taking exams,
right.
And you know, giving presentations or whatever, just having that attachment, having an ego-based attachment,
mm-hmm.
to a certain score, a certain rank, etc., and certain performance, basically, and then letting that attachment drive me to study,
mm-hmm.
and work. But
mm-hmm.
I think it becomes very debilitating when I suffer because of that attachment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning, I'm trying to just be aware of that attachment right now. Like, if I want to, hypothetically, if I want to be the valedictorian, for example, that's ego-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ego-based attachment,
mm-hmm.
which is not good.
Mm-hmm.
But in our secular world, oh, valedictorian, that means, you know, you have a work ethic, you have ambition, whatever. So I find it challenging to want to, perform in the secular world where you get rewarded for individual-based accomplishment, but in the Buddhist spiritual world, none of that, it's all empty.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. So I feel sitting in the library to study really hard for that title, for example, is the source of my suffering, but because it's empty. But at the same time, in the secular world, it's applauded. I think that's the only reason why I have to kind of purify that's why I mentioned the word intention. I just have to purify my intention and look at my motivation behind it. And that's when I feel a sense of shame that my motivation is very ego-based. That's where I am right now.
But you know there aren't two worlds.
I know. I'm very conflicted. I think
if
you're honest.
Yeah. If you try really hard to purify yourself, it doesn't work.
And you feel stuck, or you feel stuck?
Yes. Yes. It's a matter of really learning yourself, learning all your powers and respecting them, and not taking it personally. There isn't an ego. That's why we talk about getting rid of the ego, because there isn't one to start with, really.
What is there?
What is there?
Just nothing, right?
Yeah.
Empty.
What is there?
I don't know.
If you look real hard, you can't find it. No, that's maybe the first thing that we all do is try to find who we are. And even understand where we are. What is this place? How did this happen? It's very mysterious, and it's not something that we can manipulate. We can't engineer it and make it into something. It already is. So our work is finding out how to accept things the way they are and live with them. With kindness and gratitude and whatever wisdom we have, which you bring into your work, you bring into your relationships, you bring into the food that you eat and the sounds that you make and all the things that come together to make you. And that's changing all the time. So you can't control it so much as embrace it and allow it to be. Appreciate it and respect it. You don't have to get rid of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're precious. Each one of us is precious. So number 24, slogan number 24, I always forget they're called slogans, which is such a funny word. But that's Chogyam's use in English in an amusing way, is to change your attitude. So that's the title of a book about this, is changing your attitude, which is what our practice does. Changing our attitude from being selfish to being caring for others. But just stay as you are. Just be natural and normal. Don't act like somebody special. Even if you're trying really hard in your heart to change yourself and better yourself, you still don't put yourself out there in the world as some specially holy person, some saint-like individual who is actually better than everybody else. That's what it comes down to, even though it feels like, oh, I'm so kind and generous. But as soon as you think that, then I don't think so. It's more about you than anybody else. So, not to impose your power and authority on others. Cherish others instead of cherishing yourself. I would say cherish others first, but cherish yourself as well. We're all we have in the end. This is it. We need to take care of this and deeply respect it. So he says, practice means, if you practice sincerely, you're bound to change. But don't make a big deal about it. Don't change the way you are in the world. Just be who you are. And that, of course, is a tricky question, like, who are you, really? How can you be who you are? And that means forgetting yourself. If you're trying to make a performance, that's not it. That's just an act. And of course, we do enact our life, but if we're always self-conscious about it and trying to live up to some standard of how we think we ought to be, we never find out who we really are. So best way is just to be very modest, very even humble, and don't make a big deal about who we are, and just appreciate others first. And actually, that's a very, very nourishing, very enriching kind of life. You learn so much if you make yourself available to others. And suddenly you're open to so much more information, information that all this work we do for ourselves in ourselves is formed by our connection with others. It's formed by our connection with everything, with the trees and the sky and the clouds and the cars, all of that is having a deep effect on our growth, our maturity. And so we choose as well as we can where to be and with whom to be, and work carefully on ourselves as best we can. So this is our work for the coming week. So we will all change our attitude but stay as we are. Okay?
Be very, very humble.
Yeah, be very, very humble.
And tell everybody.
Yes, yes, of course.
Yes, of course. Otherwise, you wouldn't know.
Just make sure that everybody knows. So are there questions about that? Or anything? We have a little bit of time, not much. Karen?
I was a little bit relieved to hear you say the word purification with a sort of how did you say? You said there isn't purification, or it's not a word used in this context.
Right.
Which is in contrast to maybe a previous meditation group where it seems like it was articulated as a certain number of days of purification followed by a certain number of days of bliss.
Yeah.
And this kind of...
Yeah. Well, it creates a double mind. Here's the actually truly humble, messed up person, because we're all messed up people in one way or another. And here's this goal of being a pure person. And so it's two people trying to be one. And it's not one. You can't go there. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. The purity is discovered within the mess, not someplace else. That's why we say form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. If we think of emptiness as perfection, which it's not, but many people do, then the other side of that would be the mess. But the reality is that if form is emptiness, it means that where we are right now is where it is. And it is where we are right now. And that's everywhere. Yeah.
And lotus blooms in muddy water.
The lotus
blooms in muddy
blooms in muddy waters. Yes.
Yeah. Not in purified water.
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
May you elaborate on that, please? The lotus and the muddy water.
Well, it's an image. That's how a lotus... Have you seen a lotus flower? It's beautiful, and it comes out of a mucky very muddy water, and then creates this exquisite, perfect bloom. So is both. In one place, as one thing. And of course, even that's saying too much. I mean, once we start talking about these things, it gets kind of confusing. You really can't say. If you sit quietly in some kind of peaceful quiet, you begin to feel something that you can't really talk into words. And a lot of what we say in Zen is a sort of clumsy effort to point to something that we can't say. So forget everything I said. Go home and go home and sit some more.
I thought what Billy Crystal had to say about Robin Williams. Initially, he said no words, and I thought that was.
Those are the best words.
Billy Crystal, who never seems to have a problem with words. No words.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the truth is like that.